Last week, Those Who Kill premiered on the A&E cable channel. Those Who Kill is another drama about police detectives, this one involving serial murders in Pittsburgh. On Sunday, the eighth and final episode of the acclaimed police drama True Detective channels through HBO. Crime dramas are nothing new to American television. They are produced in abundance. But the push for more disturbing storylines and imagery seems, to some eyes anyway, like a race to the cultural bottom. In this hour of midday, a continuation of the conversation with culture critic Sherry Parks about the public's fascination with the dark side, depravity, criminality, and social dysfunction, and with increasingly graphic depictions of sex and violence in entertainment television. First, the news. Welcome to the second half of today's midday. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. This is one of those rare days when I tried to stretch out some thoughts about a subject in my Sun column before continuing the conversation here on the air. The subject is one that's always out there, right on the surface of American culture, and one that gets discussed from time to time, often after a mass shooting, and that is the amount of violence in entertainment media. But more than that, it's the general depiction of American depravity, deviance, criminality, social dysfunction, often as high art, particularly on the cable channels and in film. Last week, a new show, Those Who Kill, premiered on the A&E cable channel, another drama about police detectives, this one involving serial murders in Pittsburgh. On Sunday, this coming Sunday, the eighth and final episode of the acclaimed police drama True Detective, starring Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey, channels through HBO. Now, my column in The Sun today was about True Detective and how, despite the artistic qualities that recommend it to an adult audience, I decided to step off the True Detective fan train, a personal choice made for mental health reasons. I came to see it as another in a line of cop dramas that push the boundaries with extreme concepts of violence against children, in this case, soft porn, and flawed characters everywhere you look, all of it in the service of creating the buzz necessary for commercial success in a digital world drenched in over-the-top depravity. It's a skewed, grotesque, and depressing picture, and maybe I get enough of that stuff from following news about crime and violence and a lot of it right here in my own community. Maybe I don't need to be entertained, so to speak, with fictionalized human horror shows. Now, of course, we've been saturated in fictionalized depictions of deviance and violence for so long that it's quite possible we've lost track of its significance as a social influence. And on a personal level, we all think we know the difference between fact and fiction. And fiction, cloaked generally in the cape of art, seems to be held intellectually separate as something we understand to be artificial, a contrivance, a conceit, nothing more than an exercise in storytelling, something that does more good than harm. But, you know, I think as consumers of the culture, we get to question what the entertainment industry delivers just as we question what large chemical and pharmaceutical companies deliver. Does it really do more good than harm? There are so many ways to think about this and slice it and measure it. Crime dramas are nothing new to American television, and they are produced in abundance. But the push for more disturbing storylines and imagery seems, to some eyes anyway, like a race to the cultural bottom. So in this hour of midday, a continuation of a conversation we started last month with culture critic Sherry Parks about the public's fascination with the dark side, depravity, criminality, social dysfunction, and with increasingly graphic depictions of sex and violence in entertainment television. Sherry Parks joins us once a month to talk about American culture. She's associate dean in the College of Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland College Park, and one of our favorite guests here on Midday. Nice to see you again, Sherry.
Thank you.
So I said my piece in my column today, I said basically, you know, I understand the artistic qualities in this show, especially True Detective, the first few episodes for me. And then at some point I said, wait a minute, this is enough. It's sort of like I describe it as a 10-car pileup of depravity with so many bleak storylines everywhere you look. And I just decided that, you know, I've kind of had enough of this. And other people have written to me today saying, They've hit such a wall, too, when it comes to their choices as far as entertainment. And I guess I don't knock other people who watch it. I do, but I do question, at some point, I question whether we fully understand, comprehend, and appreciate how it might be affecting us, our sensibilities.
Well, and it has increased. So there are studies now that show that one, there are more crime dramas on the air than there used to be, and they're more violent than they used to be. And there are studies, recent studies, that said that there's more PG gun violence and there's more overall violence. The overall violence has doubled since 1950, so there's more of it. And what we also know is that because of advances in technology, you've gone from more literary treatments of violence to very visually graphic violence. So you don't no longer have to necessarily kind of, you know, do it with paint, that you can actually show somebody, you know, drilling into somebody's eyes because of the computer technology. So it's become much more graphic and therefore much more involving. And one of the things I need to respond to that you brought up is this division. And you're right. Every time we do a show about something about fiction, somebody calls up and says, okay, you know, folks, it's fiction.
It's fiction. It's make-believe.
There's a relationship. I mean, certainly we all do know when we're making believe, most of us, we're making believe versus living life. But that does not mean that there's not some washover from what we see as fiction into our lives. There's really good data about desensitization, that we become desensitized, at least in our watching of it. There's even the idea that it then begins to color our worldview. We begin to overpredict our own vulnerability to crime and the efficacy of the police to take care of it. And so we really are changing ourselves when we watch this much violent media. And the thing that worries me the most, and this is, I'm going to say this as a citizen as well as somebody who's researched this, that it's one thing to face the terrible. That's a part of life, the crime, the drama, the violence as part of life. It's another to take gleeful joy in it, to be titillated by it. I think those are two different things, and that's the part that worries me.
Is there a little bit of guilt at all in feeling entertained by things? For instance, you know, the depiction of violence against children, which is the case in True Detective, and maybe in other stories too. You know, we've spent time here on this air talking about human trafficking, the problem of child abuse, the problem of abuse against women, the domestic violence. All those things, and I'm not saying that you're desensitized to those things by watching this on but is there a little bit of a guilt associated with knowing that this is a commercial enterprise, right? These TV shows, they want more people watching. A True Detective has 11 million viewers each week, supposedly. The film industry, you know, they roll out these big films. They want to make money, obviously, a profit from it. But I wonder about, like, where's the responsibility there? I mean, if you're exploiting, and I call it exploiting, these very real problems that exist in our society, how is this making things better for us here? And is that the artist's obligation at all?
Yeah, and many artists would say no, and there's a space for that argument. I think there's a difference between bearing witness, saying, okay, there is a problem with child abuse and we have to know these case studies. It's the Amnesty International way of, let's show you this so that you can then affect change. I think there's a difference between that, bearing witness, and watching it as a relaxing evening at home. And I talked to a couple of people who really do enjoy gore. And I said, so, you know, because I personally don't understand it. I'm one of those people who's actually fairly sensitive to that kind of violence on TV. And one woman that I spoke to, whom I respect, said, it is very contained. And I know it's contained. So it's safe that way. And when I watch that gore, I compare it to my life, and my life seems safer because of it, because I'm imagining this thing that will never happen to me. Ah. And it, I know it will be resolved. And it actually makes her feel better to watch it, which is not catharsis. By the way, there's no clinical evidence for catharsis, that you're purged and therefore better for watching violence. Lots of people bring it up, but we haven't been able to reproduce it. Let's just say that. But there are people who report feeling better because of it. But at the same time, you're imagining, I mean, you're bringing this into your head, these ideas. And that's the difference between the literary, where you can imagine it however you want to this very, very graphic violence. And we know particularly boys, young boys, will imitate what they see on television. And we know that girls are, while their violence and imitation violence is increasing, the tendency is to identify with the victim. Now think about that. Think about these crime shows from the victim standpoint and what it may be doing to your daughters.
What about this argument, Sherry, that this is nothing more than a depiction of the reality of our society? American society is a violent society. There's deviance, depravity, there's child abuse, there's child molestation. All those pathologies exist out there. And if someone makes a show about them, they're making it very real. That's merely the artist is being reflective of the society.
And then what?
I mean, well, that's what I asked. Okay, well, then what? Then what have you done here?
And there's I think that's the difference between bearing witness and using it as entertainment. Because when it's over as entertainment, you turn off the TV or you go home, and that's the end of it. We have yet to see a movement come out of entertainment television in that sense, where somebody says, because this really is pulling things from the invisible into the visible. Television and movies do that all the time.
But cite me an example where that moved people to action, so to speak.
Right. Because it does get, the narrative does get resolved. That troubled police person does take a type of justice. And so it is resolved. It's not left hanging and then it's not documentary style where it's left hanging and then there's a website that you can go and donate money or take action. Right. That's not the narrative that we're talking about. We're talking about visiting this terrible place, seeing it being taken care of by people that we don't really even want to know. I mean, we're just happy that they're taking care of it. And then we go to sleep.
You mean the two detectives?
Well, I mean, whoever, of that whole genre.
Who's ever resolving the conflict.
Right.
Right. What about this? I see a comment on Facebook today about 12 Years a Slave. Okay. It's very, disturbing, obviously, a story of American slavery. You better not go see that, Dan, someone said, because it carries violence as well. And I'm not, I've seen plenty of violence in film. And on television over the years, and explicit sexual depictions. So I'm not new to this at all. I'm just saying I've sort of personally reached a peak where I don't want to watch that anymore. But I intend to see 12 Years a Slave. I haven't yet. But
and it's interesting because it's won all kinds of awards, and yet the attendance has not been very high. And I think in part because it is realistic violence. This is where the line is. 12 Years a Slave is a not fiction. It is a real story of a real man's life, and the brutality that's in it actually happened, and not just to this one person. It happened to millions of people, and we have not faced that. I think that's a harder show to watch. It's certainly hard for me to watch, and the same with The Wire, but I know that it happened, and in order to be a knowledgeable person, I need to face that. That's different than, and some people did say that 12 Years a Slave was violence porn. The difference between realistic violence and violence porn for me is why it is there in the narrative. Is it there because it happened? Is it there because it's making a point? Or is it there because, we mentioned this last time, it's a mediocre script or even an okay script, and the violence is there to heighten the narrative without necessarily teaching us something.
Mm-hmm. And I say I intend to see it. I have no hesitation about wanting to see it because it is a real story and because of this narrative that I need to know as an American citizen. I don't feel quite the same, nowhere near the same, when it comes to an HBO show about detectives investigating serial murders.
And the same case can be made for The Wire. I mean, we live in Baltimore, so we're supposed to like it. But I also think that since nobody has said about The Wire that it was unrealistic. Actually, it's hyper-realistic. It happens.
Sherry Parks, our guest, as usual, once a month here for Midday on Culture. You're welcome to join our conversation. 410-662-8780 is our phone number if you'd like to talk about True Detective or any other of those shows. And welcome back to Midday on American Culture with Sherry Parks. Dan Roderick's here. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here if you want to call and join our conversation as we discuss about what's on TV these days, specifically TV shows that present a great depravity in our society, depict American depravity, violence, social dysfunction, criminality, to such an extent that you kind of get turned off by it. If you're somebody like that, please give us a ring. If not, if you enjoy this stuff and you think there's something socially redeeming about all of it out there, because there is a pile of it out there, please give us a ring. Some comments on True Detective. Specifically, we'd like to hear from you on True Detective. If you've watched all 7 episodes and tend to watch the 8th one, if you've become a fan, or if you've sort of hit a wall as I did and just turned off from it. Here's a couple of comments, Sherry. Let me read a couple of emails that came in. This one is from Mark, who said, I too was initially drawn into True Detective because of the complexity of the two main characters and their relationship. But I too have grown weary of the intensity of the depravity of each episode determined to outshine the prior. But in my experience, most programs I am initially drawn to because of the characters' complexities end up making me feel worse about our culture. It's not always about the violence. Many times it's just that all the programming on HBO, Showtime, etc., that have great talent and complex characters are so terminally flawed that it becomes too depressing to watch. Kathy writes in to say that she intended to watch True Detective, but didn't. I wanted to, but the more I heard about it, the more I realize that it would be another really well-written, engaging drama, but one that would be too graphic and violent for me. I don't think I'm overly sensitive. Like you, I want art and entertainment that makes me feel better, not that keeps me awake at night. And other people will say differently. You know, it's okay that you can disturb me with these stories. I can handle it because I know that's the reality out there. I have some other emails that I'll read about it. So,
well, I want to pull apart that statement about looking for being disturbed, mm-hmm. because we are biologically, genetically programmed to absorb risk. We actually need a little risk in our lives. And achievement in this culture means that we've achieved ourselves into boredom. And if you think about, for instance, I mean, we were talking about gender a minute ago. I mean, what boyhood looked like even a generation ago. I didn't ask you if you had a knife or something when you were a kid. Not necessarily that's a good thing, but there was more controlled risk than is often the case now for kids. And certainly for an adult, that we thrive when we have a little controlled risk. This is taking the place of that. And so we're drawn to complexity because our day-to-day lives, we work very hard to make free of as much complexity as possible, as opposed to saying complexity is a part of life and I'm just going to roll with it. And so what's happening is that people are drawn to it because nobody has made a lot of money just doing good news. I actually know a couple of journalists who tried the experiment and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's because we work really hard to admit good news into our households. And then we really do need a little adrenaline and a little stress in order to thrive.
Oh, I'm not saying, no, stop all this. I don't want to see any of this anymore. No, don't bring me any bad news. I am not like that at all. And I understand tragedy and conflict. You need this as a dramatic device, right? You need this for great storytelling. I understand it. It's just that at some point here, just you feel like you're drenched in it.
Right.
It's just too much.
And that I wanted to get to the weary part of it, because I think that's why people are drawn to it in the first place. But then television particularly is bad about this. Remember when there were sitcoms for days and then after a while, we're just going to say it. Is this television primarily just repeating a successful strategy over and over again?
Oh,
and
yeah. Look at the CSI shows.
And is
how many CSI shows were there?
Well, there are many more crime dramas than there used to be. And where's the tipping point? You're suggesting that for some viewers, that tipping point is already being reached, that they're overdoing it. They're overdoing it in terms of quantity and the quality, for lack of a better word, within the narrative, that people are really getting this. First, before you get weary, you get a little desensitized. This isn't doing it for me anymore. And then you begin to think, well, you know, how much. I talked to people who said, I don't want that kind of energy in my house to start with. And so after a while, you begin to think, well, I'm kind of done with this.
Right. But off of that, I will add this, that I think for everybody and specifically for younger people, mm-hmm. to get really excited about a new TV show, you have to hear that there's something really off the edge about it.
Well, let me ask you.
It has to create a buzz about, you're going to see something here you didn't see last time, because you don't want to be bored with just another sort of cop procedural drama. It's not enough just to solve the crime. Like the cops need to be sort of warped and twisted too. The story needs to take a dark turn, or you need to be able to. You're going to see something there that you hadn't seen previously. And I think it keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed.
I'm going to do a what if. Right. What if you reinstituted just the draft so that these kids were not pretty sure, if they're middle class, that their lives were they could control how much violence was going to be in their lives. I think the equation shifts.
You mean if they actually were in the military and we were engaged in combat? Is that what you mean?
Even just the threat of it.
Okay. What difference do you think that would make?
Well, I think then their relationship with violence as entertainment would change. That this is a very safe conversation. You can just turn the TV set off and it goes away.
Or your video game, right?
And it goes away. Mm-hmm. And because you can pretty much know that if you're middle class in a society, that you can, I mean, think about the way Baltimore is laid out. You can drive a certain way that will make sure that you're pretty safe for most of your day, right? And so I think with the risk, with the threat of violence, this relationship to violence as entertainment shifts. And I think that's what kids are doing.
What about kids that live in places where there is a real threat of violence? I mean, in neighborhoods that have high incidence of violent crime.
Well, and they are
living with it, right?
Yeah. Well, they are living with a different type of crime. It's not the same as the video games.
That's what I mean. You will find just as much fascination with those video games among kids in those areas as those who live far from it or think they're safe anyway.
Well, I think that is a different type of relationship than the safe one. Then you might get into the relationship I was just talking about with the woman who said, well, at least my life isn't this violent.
Right. Now, what about this argument that came up after Sandy Hook, after Newtown? We mm-hmm. enter into this discussion every time there's a mass killing, mass shooting, something like that. And there were actually hearings in Congress over this about whether violence in video games, depicted in video games, contributes to violent behavior. And, you know, you hear both sides of that, and intuitively it seems like it does make sense because the kids are drenched in it. There's so much of it available, and then you have sociologists who say, well, there's absolutely no connection.
There is settled science. There are over 3,000 studies that say there's a relationship between watching violence and imitating it. And in the 1970s, the Surgeon General issued a statement very much like, in the same decade as they issued the statement about cigarettes and lung cancer, that watching violent television leads to violent behavior. The best study I've ever seen is a 10-year-long study. It was a British study that followed the 8-year-old boy to the 18-year-old man. And loaded lots of factors in, you know, race, social class, you know, all kinds of things. The thing that best predicted how violent the 18-year-old would be was how much violent television the 8-year-old watched. It's settled science in terms of imitation.
Sherry mentioned a few minutes ago, or before the previous break, that PG-13 movies now have become increasingly violent. And this is from a long study done by the American Academy of Pediatrics that was published late last year. Today's PG-13 movies are more violent than R-rated ones, according to this study. The study looked at a sample of the top 30 films each year since 1950. It found that violence in films has doubled since 1950. And that gun violence specifically in PG-13 movies has more than tripled since 1985 when the PG-13 rating took effect. Gun violence remained the same in R-rated movies and decreased in G and PG movies. Let's go to the phone lines. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. At midday, we'll have time for Meg's call before our next break. Meg, thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, in a general sense, I agree with you about being weary of sort of gratuitous violence. At the same time, I do think that there's real value sometimes in depictions of violence. And the thing that comes to mind immediately, because I just watched the movie, is the violence in 12 Years a Slave, which treats a subject that normally, it, to my mind, is quite sanitized. And sanitized to an extent that people begin to not really think about what it means to be a slave and subject to violence. So, for example, and I haven't let my children watch that movie, but I feel like my children in school get this very sanitized version of slavery, and that makes me concerned that it feeds into, like, this idea of, like, the happy Negro.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm saying is I think that sometimes there's real value there and that that shouldn't be discounted.
All right, you know, I think we're with you, Meg. I believe this is similar to what Sherry was saying earlier about it.
Well, I call this facing the terrible, and that when you see 12 Years a Slave or read the book, you're facing the early history of this country. That's in the bones of this country, and it's important to face it. And you're right, 12 Years a Slave, I think more than Django, I'm sorry, twists the narrative. The Gone with the Wind is still the most popular novel in American life. The film is the most popular film in American life. Very sanitized idea of, you know, with the happy slaves for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so we have not faced how brutal, I mean, you can't enslave people without brutality, how brutal slavery was and how that still ricochets through our culture in a lot of ways. And I think there is value in that. And realistic violence, violence that actually happens in the lives of people is important for us to face. I think that's different than violence for titillation purposes.
Sherry Parks with us in this hour of midday. You're welcome to join our conversation, especially if you'd like to talk about True Detective, 410-662-8780. Chris writes in on Facebook to say, my wife and I simply can't take this sort of thing, True Detective, however well-crafted it might be. TV, movie folks are now capable of making great-looking, artful shows that jangle our nerves and turn our stomachs with almost scientific precision. We'll take a short break on midday. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, a toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. A quick break now as we ask you to make a donation to WYPR. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks with Sherry Parks. I want to read some emails that came in specifically about True Detective and also more generally about our discussion here. Doug says, the violence on police procedurals doesn't really bother me because I will never be in those situations, is sort of what you were saying before, Sherry. But I couldn't stand watching Mad Men and House of Cards because I really do interact with people that are gross womanizers and power hungry. To me, those are more disturbing because they're more like real life. Doug's perspective. Mm-hmm. And Neil wrote to me today. Neil is a fan of True Detective and explains why here, I think, pretty well. He says, for me, the existential crisis that Rust Cole, that's the detective played by Matthew McConaughey, and I can say Oscar winner Matthew McConaughey, articulates as a sort of prophecy of doom is what grabs me. And Marty, played by Woody Harrelson, his aversion, attraction to it as he goes through his own transformation is what I find so riveting. It's ironic that the graphically honest portrayal of violence within the seamy, morally lazy climate of Louisiana and its effect on people's moral sensibilities, it probably is what makes this series less about the violence and more a grotesque work of art within a certain genre. It's the gratuitous violence and sex in almost every other form of TV trash that desensitizes us to the point that it takes a masterpiece like True Detective to grab us and shake us and move us so deeply. And I challenged him a little bit. I said, you know, depravity is art. And he says it's not depravity that's the art. It's the medium of expression and the intelligence of the dialogue. He says the idea that the good guys, meaning the cops, have to be able to think like the bad guys to effectively combat them and what that does to them, I find that interesting because they sacrifice a part of themselves for the good of the whole.
Well, and we do need to remember that at some level these are morality plays, that the good guy most of the time wins. And it's long been the case in violent television that the good guy has to use some of the instruments of the bad guys. Good guys win because they're more violent than the bad guys, so that you get that. And it could be comforting that these good bad guys, these antiheroes, are between us and the really bad people.
Let's take another call. Sherry, James in Ellicott City, welcome to Midday. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Listening to the program, and I basically agree with the thrust. It seems to me that particularly broadcast TV is substituting really depraved violence, serial killing, and explicit depictions of gore because they can't do even a little titillating sex or nudity. So to compete with that on cable, broadcast has gone to shows, and I think the worst of them is what should be a good character drama, and that's Criminal Minds, which has good actors, but there's not that much depraved serial killing in American history, let alone every single week. And I think that if you have dozens of shows doing 26 shows a year depicting serial killers, it's silly.
Yeah. It's that 10-car pileup I talked about. Go ahead.
Well, this is interesting in a couple of ways because, I mean, the laws around pornography say, I mean, the way you define it is if a child were to see it, would it deprave the child? And you've used the word, Dan, depravity a lot in this show, suggesting that it is depraving to watch it. And we don't have a similar definition of too much violence in media, that if a child were to watch it, would it deprave them?
No, there's a resistance to it.
Right.
Right. You march out the sociologists to tell you there is a connection, then they bring out some others to tell you there isn't. And Hollywood says, no, please go away with that argument. And we're artists and it's free expression and we'll do whatever we want. And it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of social responsibility there from what I see.
But remember, the sociologists are saying that are going against the bulk of the research.
The settled science. Yeah. And, you know, this conversation we're having today follows the conversation we had last month about the exporting of American culture and what we're exporting. And all this is about balance for me, right? Our guest last month said that we export too much of the negative view of America. Remember, she cited a man who was in the Middle East somewhere and wondered, is it true that 50% of American fathers molest their daughters? Remember that? She had this conversation with, and she was struck by, it was Martha Blaylock.
Yes.
Is that her name? I'm sorry. She's at Boston College. I can't remember the last name. I think it was Blaylock. But anyway, she said, she was, of course, struck, taken aback by this comment. She said, well, where did you get that? And he said, well, if it's not true, why do you spend so much time talking about it on television? And his frame of reference was like Jerry Springer show or some other show like Dr. Phil or something like that. And that's what he was seeing. That's what was being exported to his country and that he was seeing on television there. So this is about balance. Like, what are we shipping overseas? What are we producing here? And I think as consumers of the culture, we have as much right to question what's being produced for us as we do about anything that's produced for us, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, whatever.
Well, and it's interesting because the word dark has been tossed around a lot, too. And as a Black person, I have trouble with this kind of dark, this double meaning of darkness, because in crime dramas, racial minorities are overrepresented. And so there really is a kind of us versus them. And who take that statement about how people abroad feel about the United States, transplant it to the United States, and how do affluent white people feel about people of color, are working class white people, and whether they're safe or dangerous or not.
Let's take another call. Carol in Glen Burnie, you're on Midday on Culture this hour with Sherry Parks. Hi.
Hi, Dan. Yeah, I was the guy who was just on the phone ahead of me actually mentioned what I was going to say first about Criminal Minds. Mm-hmm. I used to watch that all the time, and then eventually it was like it was so dark every week, and there was so much violence depicted against women that I just, you know, it got to be where I used to kind of enjoy it when I first started watching it. After a while, it just felt like when somebody's piling rocks on top of you, one rock at a time,
right?
And you feel like you're being driven down. So it was like I had to stop watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I was an emergency room nurse in Baltimore City for over 30 years, so I know reality. You know, I've seen it up close and personal, and I know the bad things that people do to each other. So it's like when I was away from work, it was like I had to have pure escapist fantasy.
Right, right.
You know, Star Trek, Star Wars, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know.
Marx Brothers.
anything that just, you know, because I've seen what can happen, and I didn't want to be around it outside of work.
Thank you very much. I just, you know, I need to be careful that I don't say all of it should just go away and I'm not going to ever watch any of that anymore again. That's not the case. Just in this particular case is one of the walls that I've hit. And it's happened a couple of times to me where you have to step back and say, whoa, all these critics are saying how great this is. And it's really hip to like this kind of show and talk about it, take part in the online conversations, in this case about True Detective. It's spun off a sort of a cult following already really, really quickly. Because of the central literary reference in it that I mentioned in my column today. But, you know, I say, wait, stop a minute. I just want to stop here and say, what is the difference between this and any other form of cynical exploitation of our fears about the violence in our society, and how and what's it doing to make us this a better society? So I think you have a right to ask those questions.
And what the callers are actually mentioning is that the show is intelligent. That's what they like about it.
That's what sucks you in.
That pairing of violence and intelligence isn't necessary.
Right. Here's Deborah's comment. She says, I too started watching True Detective, but I couldn't continue because the story bothered me so much that I had a hard time getting it out of my head. Then for some reason, I actually watched one more episode, and that just made me feel guilty and kind of slimy for having watched it, so I stopped. But, you know, I can imagine that people are going to go back to see what happens here in the final episode. David in Towson writes to say that I thought some of the Law & Order SUV shows were also pretty good until I saw two shows, one depicting a trafficked child, another a sexual torturer. I chose not to invite this depravity and horror depicted on the show into my life anymore. I am perplexed that movies like Saw have been top box office draws. Why is this torture porn celebrated as entertainment? Are we any better than the Romans, who were entertained by watching lions eat slaves or gladiators bashing each other to death? And I wanted to note also that there was an award given to the developers of Grand Theft Auto. And there was something of a controversy over it. It's kind of amusing to read the comments about this because I guess the latest version of Grand Theft Auto, I don't watch the stuff, but has a torture scene in it. You can put electrodes on somebody's body and torture them.
And that video games, what are called first shooter, or in this case, first torturer videos, are particularly disturbing. There's good data, and the military actually uses, not Grand Theft Auto, but they have found that you can make a soldier through video games. And so there's a very close connection to imagining yourself carrying out violence and the ability to carry out violence.
Well, what were you saying before about the draft and young men? You know, you're suggesting that veterans of war, of actual combat, would have quite a different view of this violence, gratuitous, playful violence in games or on TV.
And right? I think the emergency room nurse who called in is making that point, that she's seen enough real graphic violence that she's not entertained by it.
I think if someone watched The Wire and True Detective, writes Tim, and indexed the scenes, you would see that there is less violence than many other TV shows. The violence may be more realistic or stylized, but those two shows are more about the response to or effects of violence than they are about actual violence. Why does it seem like in our country we are more concerned with realistic violence and sex than violence that shows no consequence? Shows no consequence. Okay. Let's take another call. Ann in Hunt Valley, you're on with Dan and Sherry. Hi.
Hi. What I found, and I didn't think about it until I heard y'all's show, is that there's a real lack of counterbalancing to all this violence. Years ago, you know, you had the West Wing. I mean, you have Newsroom with Aaron Sorkin now, which is limited. But it seems like there's just a lot to watch in terms of violence, in terms of flawed heroes, and not a lot to counterbalance that. I find myself, you know, I tried watching True Detective, and I really just could not do it. Same thing with The Wire, partly because of what I do for a living. But if I watch CBS Sunday Morning, or if I watch West Wing again on Netflix, somehow I can kind of come back to, okay, this is happening, and I can look at an artistic value, I can look at actors, directors, that kind of thing. So I'm just wondering what you think about that, if you think that we're really kind of overbalanced with violence.
Well, it's interesting because one of the shows that I think shows this is Scandal, which, I mean, is a show about Washington, D.C., and wasn't particularly graphically violent when it started, but now it is. So much so that somebody related to the show I talked to recently said, we're not even sure how we're going to pull it back in. And that, I mean, you just kind of have to keep going out there. And I think it is a way to be popular. Human beings, I think, are very interesting, but it takes a very talented writer to show that, how interesting we are. So I think you can get intelligence and complexity without violence.
One more email that I wanted to read. I thought this was interesting off of our show on the Academy Awards on Friday with Linda and Chris, noting how well Gravity had done at the box office. And Helen wrote in from Owings Mills and said, Gravity had, This is her theory about why Gravity made so much money. Gravity had no sex, no nudity, no bad language, no bloody violence. It was rated PG-13. People could take their kids to it. That's my guess. A few years ago, I was persuaded by a family member to go see Jack and Jill with him. It was awful. Even he agreed. But the theater was packed with families with kids. I think that one made money, too. Anyway, interesting what she said about Gravity.
Gravity creates excitement without violence.
Right,
which
exactly.
is the point we made.
Sherry, nice to have you here with us again. Thank you for holding my hand through this conversation. I appreciate it. But it's a conversation we need to have from time to time. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Sherry Parks joins us once a month for Midday on Media here on our show on WYPR.